Hey, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fabulous film, a perfect host, and the director decided to join us tonight. Thank you so much for coming on, Chad.
It's all the same.
Yeah. So let's discuss A Perfect Host. I really want to discuss the concept of this film.
Yeah.
Is this something that happened to you?
No. That'd be insane if it did. It's kind of just an amalgamation of all my biggest fears, which are, you know, staying in a stranger's house in the middle of the woods and fitness freaks. So that's where it all kind of came from. And the rest, just the imagination. My brother stayed at an Airbnb that was, the host was, he wasn't as insane as the one in our movie, but he definitely just didn't leave them alone. And my brother told me that story, and I was like, man, that is crazy that you're staying at someone else's house. And so I think that's kind of where the seed of the idea spurred, but the rest was just what if, a lot of what ifs.
Oh, there's a ton of what ifs in this film. I do want to discuss a few of them, if that's okay with you, but we'll get there later. So the origin of the film is an Airbnb that your brother had. He had to put up with a crazy neighbor.
Yeah.
The owner. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, you're renting an Airbnb. Leave me alone.
Yeah, exactly.
So where did you find your location? I mean, it looks like a beautiful house somewhere in the middle of the woods.
Yeah, that was actually when we filmed it, I was living in Austin. And so Austin, Texas. And we actually used Airbnb to find it. And so we got a hold of the owner, and they were like more than willing to help us. It was the perfect location. We looked at a good amount of them, but that one was like right on the water. It was exactly what we were looking for. So
now you start off the film. I hate to use the word old timey music, but I don't know how else to describe it.
Nah, that's how I would call it. Yeah. Old timey. Okay.
So where did the music come from? Why that music?
I'm a big fan of just juxtaposition in movies, and when the music doesn't totally match the tone of the film, it helps me. I'm a big fan of tongue-in-cheek humor and just kind of like winking at the audience a bit. And I think with that, first off, the song was available to us, and then second off, it has these kind of creepy lyrics that make you feel uneasy throughout it, and talking about being afraid to come home in the dark. And
yeah.
I think that was the main purpose, was just getting those kind of creepy undertones to kind of, and let the audience know, like, hey, this movie, it's going to be okay to laugh. Like, you know, we're not taking ourselves too seriously with this. So
hold on. So this is not a horror film? Because I really took it as a straight horror film.
I mean, we it's a horror film, but we had some we definitely wanted to interject some creepy comedy in there. So there's a good amount. I would call it a straight up horror film and advertise it as such. But
okay, good. I'm like, did I read this wrong? The pictures of the statues. Did you just take those off Google, or did you actually go somewhere to film them?
No, those are from a library of images, not from Google, but purchased images. So
okay, you have another friend's apartment, I presume, in another house. That's not the same Airbnb, is it?
No, we use a different place for that.
Okay, did you set design your house in any way?
Yeah, so we have one of my producers, actually, her kind of start in the whole business was on art design, and she was a art director for a bunch of commercials and music videos and short films and feature films. And this was her kind of first, she'd produced other things, but her first foray into producing feature films. And so actually set design was like super important to our movie. And I was pretty particular about the colors that could be in it. And we even had we accidentally got like, it's a small shot that no one would notice, but we had there's a blue bicycle in the background, and I had my VFX guy change it to red because I was like, there can't – I had like a very specific color palette that we were using. So,
well, there's something good to discuss, your color palette. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it sounds like you're very particular. You want a blue bike changed to red. So what were you looking for in your color palette? I mean, there's so much going on in this film. I didn't find colors pop and you bounce me around a lot. You really don't let me feel comfortable as a viewer.
I mean, I had a pretty specific shot list and pretty specific color palette. There was very few things done by accident. And I think when you're making an independent film, you have to, when on a like strict time budget and financial budget, you have to like plan ahead. And so there's not a lot of, you don't get to play around a lot. And so we had a very specific, and when the weather changed, the weather was changing quite a bit. So we had a very specific shot list and color palette, and those were all taken. I wanted greens and reds and grays and blacks. That was kind of all I really wanted, and yellows.
How long did it take you to shoot this? I'd say under 30 days, but I could be guessing.
Yeah, we shot this actually in 12 days. So, yeah, it was a quick turnaround. But that was, like I said, with a nice plan and one location, it makes it possible to do that. Not easy, but possible.
Again, I wanted to bring up a golf club scene with Dick songs. The Dick song?
Yeah. What about it?
I love it. Absolutely phenomenal choice in songs. I just think it was a great song choice.
Yeah.
And I found that throughout your film. I'm going to keep harping on the music because I really liked it. Where do you find these songs? Like, I understand they're royalty free, but you got to look for them.
Yeah, there's a lot of searching. But I think with it, so we did have this score. We had a beautiful, scary, unnerving score done by actually the same guy that plays Sam in the movie. He did the score for our movie as well. He's a talented musician and filmmaker in his own right. And what I based it off of was these kind of core. I loved, like, I think creepiest thing in the world is sometimes children's choirs. And so that's where I just like kind of narrowed it down by searching for that. And, worked a lot with like a music supervisor to kind of make that happen. And so we figured that out.
Now the movie's going to start. We have to have obviously a protagonist of some kind. And he rings the doorbell and the woman opens the door. And I'm thinking to myself, why did she open the door? She's out in the middle of nowhere. And she just sort of accepts him being there.
Wait, which part are we talking about?
Well, when we first meet the protagonist, we've met him before, then he comes back, and it's at night, and he opens the door, and he comes in, and you're like, why are you here?
Yeah. You mean Tad, the antagonist?
Yeah, sorry. Tad, the antagonist. Sorry, I apologize.
No, it's fine. I think part of it was just they were expecting the other people to come, so that's why they thought maybe they were locked out.
I was thinking the same thing, but I think it all starts at the beginning when he goes, did you try the code?
Yeah.
Like, I think the problems start right there. Was that your plan to make us think that the problems were going to start? Because I thought maybe it was a House of Horrors before we went in the door. Maybe somebody's going to axe them. Like, I have no idea what I'm watching a film and I'm getting into.
Right. Yeah, no, that was definitely the intention, was to set this host, this guy's pretty strange from the beginning, and then also, there's some fun Easter eggs when the code doesn't work, but it works for the other couple that gets there without spoiling too much of the plot.
Well, we're not going to spoil the plot. We're just going to touch on things.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I thought it was funny that their workout scenes did make me laugh.
Yeah.
Now, how did you devise what they were going to work out? Like, that's what I was trying to figure out. I mean, I could see them going outside doing javelin 20 minutes later.
Yeah. It was honestly just based off terrible, crazy workout classes I've been to where they're making you throw things and pick up things. And you're like, why are we doing this? And I figured this guy's desperate enough to get away from his rejection that he'll hang out with this guy and work out with him and think he's making him better. So I was also planning on the idea of, like, I think a lot of people, a lot of people want to play with trust and benefit of the doubt way before they want to start doubting people as crazy. And especially when you're staying in a stranger's house, you're going to be more likely to accept them as friendly, even though they might not be. And I think that was kind of playing with that idea is we hop in people's Ubers and we hop in strangers' cars and we stay at strangers' houses and we borrow strangers' tools and whatever it is, just because the internet says like, oh no, they're okay people, but it's like anyone can snap and we just don't know it. But we typically, I think it's a good thing, but we typically trust people way before we distrust them in this world.
I absolutely agree with everything you're saying. I do want to discuss a certain scene that happens on a lake. Mm-hmm. Did that come from real life or is this something you found amusing? Because I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I think it just kind of, we just found amusing. I've never, just going to summer camp as a kid and playing Rock the Boat and how annoying that is as a game. Yeah, just kind of like when people tip your boats and tip your canoes.
Now, how cold was the water? I always want to ask this question.
Yeah, no, it was freezing. We actually had a PA because one of our motors went out on one of the boats. And we had a PA like steering our boat in a wetsuit. And unfortunately, he got sick the next day from being in the cold water. So it was pretty cold. I got in to kind of prove to the actors and stuff, like, hey, this isn't that bad. But then I was actually, this is actually freezing. And thankfully, we had wetsuits for everyone, so it wasn't.
So they have wetsuits under the regular clothes then when they go in?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Couldn't tell, so there you go. Yeah. Now, you did make a Body of the Gods DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Did you just make a case? I presume there's no Body of the Gods movie.
Unfortunately not. I mean, we made kind of like a side documentary that was totally made up and fictional. It had no actual validity, or it's not from an actual place or source. But yeah, we totally just, that was our great art designer doing that stuff. So
I think if you ever put this on DVD, you should make like a 5-minute short just to add on the back of that.
Yeah. In our workout classes, for sure.
Oh, the workout classes have to be on there. There's no option.
Yeah.
Who lets this guy make them dinner? That's where I got to the point going, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's definitely where the kind of horror genre kind of comes in, and we play with the idea of, hey, you know, there's always the moment in the movie when it's like, just run, just go away,
yes.
But at the same time, I don't know, we've all been in those situations where you're too nice to say no, and when someone's really, and you're like, well, there's nothing else going on, and it is their house, and blah, blah, and that's when, I definitely think that's when the turning point of the movie is, but he goes from being annoying and weird to, okay, this guy's actually got something messed up going on with him, but we definitely kind of play on that suspension of belief. But also, I've been in so many of those situations where you're with a couple that starts arguing and you don't know how to respond, and you're at dinner and you're like, okay, I could leave. It's better if I just say nothing and if I just sit here and kind of let the moment pass, but it's really awkward to be in here. And yeah, or you've been at a friend's house and their parents start arguing, you don't know what to do, and it's all these kind of strange moments that I think a lot of times humans, we're more likely than not to like accept people for where they're at, and which is not always a good thing, but we're more likely to just be like, let's be patient and wait through this than we are to be like rude to someone. And not everyone, some people have a better meter at just being straightforward and direct, but I think majority of us don't know how to handle conflict, so we just avoid it.
Which you totally do in your film. They totally avoid the conflict. I think they get into a bit more. The main couple that sits at the house that the guy wants to date and she doesn't want to date, I don't think I'm ruining anything. I'm giving a thing. I guess my one question is, why did he go away with the weekend? Did he think he have a chance? Because I really felt there was ever a chance for him. Was there that I missed? Was there a backstory that we don't know about?
Yeah, I think that's up for, you know, your own interpretation. But I think a lot of times we go for the person or the friend that we don't have a chance with. And You know, I got married, but for the longest time, we were just friends, and it was this. So there's definitely some pull from personal experience, but we were just friends, and it was definitely like a okay, she's not into it, but I just accepted us as friends, and I think this guy's not as willing to accept it. But doesn't always not work out, is what I would say.
No, true, true. So you wrote this film with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
How was writing with somebody else? Because it sounds like this is your film. A lot of your personal experiences are in this film.
Yeah, we definitely. I mean, when it came to words on the page, I was writing it. But we definitely, Emily and I, her name's Emily Hyatt. She and I kind of came up. I wrote this as a sketch, originally, actually, like a comedy sketch that, because I was in a comedy troupe and I pitched it to them and they were like, it's a little dark for us. And I was like, okay, fair enough. And it was about like two guys taking a Groupon class in like a guy's basement, a workout class in a guy's basement that ends up being a Norman Bates type character and really creepy. And so I wrote that sketch, but then her and I kind of rewrote it together. And then we started developing the story together, and we just over emails and conversations over time, we kind of came up with the story together, and then when it came down to it, I started writing it. And so then she helped a lot with rewrites and edits and stuff and give me notes.
Well, we have to go over the cast, but I think they'll be upset listening to this. We didn't discuss them. How did you decide on who was going to play who? Because, I mean, I think your antagonist has to be who he is.
Yeah, absolutely. I worked with, I collaborate with a lot of the folks in the film and have been friends and collaborators with them for a long time. So kind of when I was writing it, I had people in mind, but obviously not everyone's always available. And when it came down to it, we had pretty much everyone cast except for my antagonist, Tad, and the main protagonist, her name's Avery in the film. And the guy that plays Tad, his name's Brady Johnson. He's phenomenal actor and writer, and I actually sent him the script to give me writing notes on and kind of help develop, just help like clean up and watch for errors and stuff and notes. And he sent me some really, really great notes and kind of helped me develop this and make it better. And then he also was like, hey, would you mind if I auditioned for this? And I was like, well, I don't know if you really looked the part. Like, he's supposed to be this kind of jacked fitness guy, and I hadn't seen him in a while. And he goes, no, dude, I've lost a lot of weight and stuff. And I was like, okay, cool. And so he sent me an audition, and honestly, it just, like, creeped me out. And I was like, he's actually perfect. And then Avery, we got her, Caitlin, through a casting call, and she's actually just become a really good friend after this and has collaborated on several other projects. One that I produced, and then another short film I directed. So, yeah.
So when you get everybody together, do you do a table read first, or you just send the script going, we're going to start? Because you only got 12-day shoots. I don't know how much time you really have to rehearse.
We did do, with our main three, with Jeff, Caitlin, and Brady, who play kind of the main three characters, we actually did do there was one night of rehearsals, just because the three of them had really not met or known each other before, and I kind of wanted to get some chemistry going, so we had them meet and hang out, and then I just had them hang out for a while, then I came on for like the last 2 hours, and we just read the script together and did some scenes. A lot of John Michael and Emily's scenes were actually majority, I had the script, and they stuck to it primarily, but I also, some of my favorite stuff from them was just when I let them riff and improv, and they're old friends and improvers, so they have like a good ability to do that. We would do the scenes many times on set, but then they would just, I'd be like, you know what, throw the script out the window, just to get what you got. And so they brought some really cool stuff, because it's all supposed to feel very natural and of the moment and not, it wasn't supposed to feel like this campy horror movie. I kind of wanted it to feel like an indie drama that becomes a horror movie. And so like a relationship movie that becomes a horror movie. And I feel like everyone really brought the chemistry and brought the, groundedness to it, because when some of the more fantastical, eccentric elements come into play in the story, I wanted it ultimately to feel grounded and that these people feel real and like, oh, I've been in a relationship like that and I've had a friendship like that. And instead of like these very campy, which I love those movies too, but like campy stock horror characters. I didn't want it to just be like the jock and the nerd and the funny guy and the hot girl. Like I wanted it to be kind of, oh, these are everyday people and this is an everyday situation that becomes very not everyday very quickly.
So with only a 12-day shoot, did you find you didn't have enough time to work on a few scenes you wanted to work on? I mean, I don't have any issues with what you did. I'm just saying, did you wish you had more time to shoot X?
Yeah, I think every – it would be hard for me to hear a director or a filmmaker of any sort say that there's a scene that they feel like they fully got to the point of completion. I think – you definitely get what you get and you work with it. And that's how you, that's like the process of making films is accepting like, that's like the beauty of editing too. And getting, of course, yeah, I'm proud of what we got and how we got it. But yeah, of course there's always that looking back and saying, oh yeah, I wish we could have done that a few more times or, but no, in terms of performance, I feel like everyone really brought their thing. It's always that just perfectionist back of your mind. I wish I would have done that differently or shot that from different coverage or whatever. But, you know, that's part of just accepting what you got and working with it. Done is better than perfect. That's kind of what
I absolutely agree. I'm not asking about funding, but I am going to ask about funding. How is raising money for your film?
You know, it's just a process of knowing people, asking, trying to provide them with the best statistics you can. And thankfully I have, I don't really necessarily need to get into that too much, but, it's not always a fun process, but it's a part of it. And I think I learned that on this one, especially is it's a part of the whole filmmaking, especially independent filmmaking, even studio filmmaking is you have to get budgets in order and you have to get finances in order and you can't, you don't need ridiculous amounts of money, but you do need money to make things happen and to pay people and make people happy. And that's just part of it.
Well, according to your credits, you had a lot of people doing your catering.
Yeah.
And I want to know how that worked, because I do watch the credits, obviously, because I get all these facts. Explain to me why are all these people doing catering on the film.
That was because we just had some really great friends and family come out and bring us meals. The nice thing about that small, I really like any set I've ever worked on, because I did commercial and music video and short film work before this, is I want it to feel like a family. I really hate going, even when it's commercials, like I really hate going to sets, and I've done plenty of other stuff where I've gone to sets that I've been hired on as an actor or a producer of some sort. And it's just when people don't like each other, it's not fun. So part of my thing is I want it to feel like a summer camp a little bit, and like a family. And part of that was getting friends and family to donate meals, and we would pay for the meals through our set, but they would make them and bring them, and everyone would thank them, and we would eat together and talk about life and what's going on in the movie and work, and all staying at that creepy cabin together really helps bring the team together and make it part of the fun of movie making.
Oh, there you go. Now it's time for some fun questions for you.
Yeah.
Because it's your first time on the show. Your favorite film?
Oh, gosh. Man. I think my go, I'll say most rewatchable for me is The Big Lebowski. I've seen that thousands of times, but favorite, there's so many. I'll say favorite right now. Or most recent favorite, which was The Two Popes. I really enjoyed that movie.
That was an excellent film.
Yeah. It was one of those movies where I was like, I could never make that movie, and I'm okay with that. And I'm like, but I enjoyed that heck out of it and watched. I don't know. It was just one of those great, great practices and kind of like slow filmmaking, but also is extremely entertaining and riveting and very human. And I think that's also just like the most recent movie I've seen lately. Parasite was also amazing.
That was a true.
It's a hard question for me. I can't. There's no like all time.
All good.
I could do a list of 20 probably.
One film you should have seen and never have.
Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, that you're missing a great film.
I know. It's literally at the top of my list.
If there's one film you could remake, which one would it be?
Oh gosh.
I didn't say the question for easy.
One film I could remake, which one would it be? Ernst Lubitsch's Heaven Can Wait. It's a 19.
God, wow.
Yeah. That was also like high up there on my list of favorite films. I keep bringing these kind of like existential films with two popes and that, but that's one of my, I wish they made movies like that still, where it's so witty, so funny, and I would love to make it for modern day, because I think a lot of the themes they deal with in that movie are still being dealt with in that. I'm not talking about the Warren Beatty one either, though.
No, I know which one you were talking about. Tell everybody where they can find your film, and the film's again called A Perfect Host.
Yeah, it's called A Perfect Host, host, not toast, as I sometimes get confused, but it's on iTunes and Amazon, Vudu, Google Play, all the above.
Well, thank you for your time and have a great night.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page? Thank you.